Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 1st, 2013. You listen to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Happy to be home in Florida.
I think the quote you said when I picked you up at the airport was, "If you had on a wig, I would have kissed you." Something to that extent.
What can I say? I miss my wife. I've been on the road for 2 weeks without her before, ever.
Yeah, that was a long time gone.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly did miss you, but her I missed a lot.
I think you missed me a little bit.
Oh, but definitely glad to be back. I love New Mexico, but it was 14 degrees when I got up that morning.
Oh, man.
It was like 82 here yesterday when I landed.
It's like almost like a culture shock, almost.
Exactly. You know, Darwin intended for us to live in 82-degree weather. That's why the Big Bang was so hot.
Yeah, it was a hot thing.
Exactly. But... Well, yeah, we certainly have a lot of stuff to catch up on, and we'll get to some of that later, too. But one of the things that I read, a very fascinating story on Politico.com last week, I believe it was. Essentially, the headline was, "How Harry Reid Lost the Online Bill."
Yeah.
And actually, it said, "How Harry Reid Lost His Internet Poker Gamble," because, you know, they got to be cutesy about poker and gambling, right?
Right.
But I thought it was kind of interesting. I mean, it really got into the fact that, at least by this writer's analysis, that where this thing got derailed was Harry was trying to get his Democratic friend that was running for Senate elected and kind of threw the Republican senator under the bus, and he got a little peeved by that, as you can imagine, and decided not to pull his weight on bringing Republicans.
Yeah. Not good. And it's like they're saying that was his best chance, and now forget it. You know, it's just crazy. Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is what happens in politics, I think. You know, I mean, you gotta wonder. I mean, again, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, I guess if you were a very partisan Democrat, which obviously Senator Reid is, and I would think anybody that's elected, you would much rather have another Democrat in the Senate, right, rather than some online poker bill, which, you know, obviously was going to be very advantageous to his constituents. But, you know, on balance, I guess you think that it's better for your constituents if you have someone from the same party also serving with you.
Right.
A bunch of other issues. So I guess I could see that. I guess maybe it was a calculated gamble. He thought he could do both, maybe. Didn't really get into that, but that's what I'm going to guess.
And then, you know, the other stuff, too, is having Kyle on his side when Kyle was leaving, you know what I mean? And now he doesn't have that guy on his side either. Just a lot of things weighed against it that happening. It's why he had to do it before, and when he didn't do it, now he's pretty much, you know, lost his opportunity. And it's just, it's sad. I mean, I think that what we always talk about is that ultimately, if these states, which, as people will find out later on, more states are moving toward trying to get it done for themselves again, I think that that will maybe open some eyes and whatever, but yeah, Harry Reid just screwed the pooch on this one.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff they don't teach in civics class, right?
No.
If they did, I would have paid a lot more attention, I think. Almost read like a spy novel, right?
Well, speaking of teaching in classes, great segues here. We're on a roll. Could have said that you came from the desert and that was where the Reid bill was lost, so I mean, we're on a roll here. But our good friend
also said that I drove through Searchlight, Nevada, where Harry Reid lives on this trip, too.
Our good friend Malcolm O'Malley, he wrote in because he had a little funny incident happening. He said, as you may or may not know, I teach small groups of immigrants and refugees English at an elementary school part-time.
I did know that.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that once before on the show, at least that we knew he taught. I am one of three people that do this at this particular school, and we all work in the same classroom. We have three groups going all at once in the classroom, which is arranged into tables that can accommodate up to six students. The tables are shaped like beans, so it's kind of like being a blackjack dealer.
Hit me!
Anyway, we have been having a problem with some of our students speaking their native language to either A, make fun of other students, or two, it's kind of funny, went from A to two, use it as a crutch. So
what
my
if they do both? Can you imagine they use a crutch and just like slapping other students and talking in their native language?
So my supervisor came up with a new rule for the classroom. When you're in English class, you must speak English at all times. She even printed out a banner that says English only at the tables. So now constantly throughout the day, I am hearing my fellow coworkers implore, English only at the tables. If I close my eyes, it kind of sounds like I'm working in a poker room with an unusual amount of collusion. Anyway, I just thought this might be a little something that you'd enjoy. Pretty funny stuff, plus the tables are shaped like poker tables or gambling tables, and that is pretty funny.
Yeah, you know what that reminded me of when I read this, what it reminded me of is, you know, we did a show where people wrote in and talked about how poker kind of permeates their everyday life.
Yeah.
You know, when you're making change and stuff, you're trying to, you know, do it in denominations of poker chips and things like that, and it's kind of funny. This is another thing exactly like that, but really hilarious, to be honest. I mean, if somebody did, like, one of those, you know, the Farley brothers did some kind of, or the Wayans brothers did some kind of poker movie spoof, this would be perfect for it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I remember one time having a brainstorming meeting at the Times. I can't remember which one it was, if it was TBT or the sports section when I was working down in sports, but it was during my poker, you know, beginnings, but I was pretty heavily in the poker at the time, and they were brainstorming, and they're going around the room, and then when it got to me, I tried to check. I had nothing. I had nothing to offer that day, and I was just kind of like, check. And they're like, what? I'm like, never mind. I refuse my option. Whatever, you know, it's had nothing to say. I always wanted to write a book like that, too, for us. You know, like, you know, you play too much poker when, and then that's one of them, the board meeting, they look for your opinion and you check, you know, or something like
there
that.
There you go, I like it.
But,
maybe we'll work on that after Untraceable 2.
Yeah, yeah, when I'm done with my sequel. But, pretty funny stuff, man. Love it when O'Malley chimes in.
Now, I wonder, did the kids get a one-round penalty when they speak in their native language?
We're going to be talking about verbs today, but you can't listen. Come back to us tomorrow when we're on adjectives.
10 lessons and then you're back in. Once the button gets back to you, you can sit back down and start learning again.
Come back here when you know what adjectives mean. That's pretty funny.
Oh, Malik cracks me up. That's great.
Scott, taking it to another level.
Well, we did that. The hotline finally ring, and it was ringing off the hook while I was gone. Maybe people just thought you were lonely, Chris.
Yeah, that's got to be it. Actually, no, they're just always afraid that you're going to answer. Now that they know you're out of town, they can talk
to
you.
That's true, that's true. They thought it was pretty safe to get it up so they could make, you know, a couple of those goofs that they make, and they keep calling back and filling my inbox with seven emails about seven partial clips.
That's right.
Not that I don't appreciate those, you know, right in my day. But, you know, the hotline number again is 813-448-1120. Our good friend Mark from Minneapolis is the caller today, and here's what he asked.
Hello, Scott and Chris. This is Mark from Minneapolis. This is a long-time listener, first-time caller bit. I'm just calling. I've been listening for a very long time, and at the beginning of every podcast, it says, you're an award-winning podcast, but I've never learned what award you got. So if you could maybe enlighten me, that'd be great. And keep warm, because I'm not. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Well, I know that we won the Reader's Choice Award for Bluff Magazine. Until they banned us from being nominated because we became a contender to their right as best magazine in the world. So the minute we became competition, they eliminated us. But 1 year we won it, and they didn't even run it in the magazine then either. I remember that.
That's right.
And it was funny because they had a space for it in the magazine. You could tell the designer was like, I know I'm supposed to put something here. And he ended up putting, like, just this big piece of art that had no rhyme or reason, had no right to be there, but you could tell that's where our write-up was supposed to go, and that kind of ticked me off. But we won that award. We won the Chicago Poker Club.
Yes, a couple years, I believe. A
couple
right?
years running, I think it was, for a while there. And then I know that my mom thinks that we're the best, so...
Yeah, I was going to say that my mom gave me a great participation ribbon a couple months ago. And you know, I feel bad because, you know, I love her, and I appreciate that she supports me, but I'm like, do you know how many ribbons Chris's mom's given him? You got to keep up with the Joneses, Mom. Come on. Every time he goes over there for dinner, she's giving him another award.
Yeah, it's crazy. So we won a few awards. You know, the other stuff, too, is a lot of times we're not nominated anymore because, you know, you get retired from a category because you win it so many times. You know, that could be one of the things.
Yeah, we used to get nominated for those podcastawards.com a lot, and then I don't know what happened with that. I don't know if they're still doing that or what, but...
We were once featured on iTunes.
That's true. We were featured.
A couple of times,
right?
Yeah, that's an award, and new and noteworthy once.
New and noteworthy.
We were
yes.
only new or noteworthy once. So,
but, remember, we had to send a report to our bosses at the time so they could brag about us, and then tell us they don't really want us there anymore.
Yeah. But I do remember when we quit. We quit the show first before we quit the Times, and they were all just scrambling. They're like, "Why? Why?" And we're like, "Really? You have to ask why?" Couldn't believe that they asked us why.
Oh, man. I will tell you, though, that I've heard through back channels that some of the bigwigs there are appreciative of our success and admit that there was a mistake to let us go.
Really?
Yes.
What are you waiting to tell you that?
But well, yeah, I'll tell you more after the show. But
oh,
yes,
my
yes.
goodness. Why are you waiting to tell me that? Oh, my goodness. Now I'm all weepy.
We just got all kinds of stuff to tell you. I can't remember everything.
I'm resigning my position from Annie Up. I'm going back to the Times.
Well, now your mom can make you another award.
All right. But no, we did. We won a few awards early on. And so when we say we're an award-winning podcast, wherever we say it, I'm assuming it's on the website now, we're not lying. We have awards. We also have a beautiful award from our listeners,
yes.
A 100-episode beautiful crystal trophy that, by the way, Scott, I will be giving to you because I've held it far too long in the
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I've never actually seen it, I don't think.
Yeah, so I'm going to give it to you on Sunday or something so you can have it.
Oh, excellent.
For a little while. So I've had it for what, 300?
For our custody dispute, right?
Yeah, I've had it for like 300 episodes. You can have it for the next 300 if you want.
I get it for odd years.
The weird thing is Faso's name's on there, too, which I've tried to scratch it out, but it's really carved in there deep, so I'm going to have to get some 80 grit to really... sand it down. But you'll be getting that award soon. So there's another award, Mark, that we won. So.
Excellent. Oh, Mark, we're going to give you an award, too. It's a major award. It's not a big leg lamp, but it's pretty close. It's a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Definitely be sure to ask about that Antiup logo version they do. And don't forget to use code Antiup so you don't have to pay the shipping man.
The funniest part about the leg lamp is when Ralphie starts putting his hand up the thigh. I'm like, Ralphie, what are you doing?
Well, you know, you don't like Ralphie, man. He's,
he's like
he's
eight.
In business. I got to tell you, when I was up in Maine, though, one of the restaurants I went to, it had a little miniature version of that was just like on this little tiny shelf.
Oh.
And the shelf was perfectly sized for it. It's almost like the guy's like actually got this major award. Actually, I guess it's a minor award because it's much smaller, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And said, build me a shelf just for that. It was really awesome. I almost took a photo of it.
That is so cool, man. I love when he plugs in one more plug and the thing catches on fire. I'm like, how does it catch on fire and then still work? That, it did happen like that back then, too. That's
yeah,
so weird.
Well, that stuff's fragile, you know. So
fragile. It's Italian. All right, our mailbag comes from Ken Allard, our big contest winner. From
Annie of Celebrity Chef.
That's right. And he says, I'm heading to Vegas for the first time, March 13th to the 17th. That's my dad's birthday's in there, so take him with you. Do you have a first-timer guide or know of a good one? Have you guys ever done a show of first-timers to Vegas or considered one? I would love to hear what you have to say before we head out. Well, take Chris Moneymaker with you again. That would probably be my first tip.
Exactly. You might even be out there.
That's right.
Yo, Chris!
Let's hook up!
Remember me? I'm Ken! Ken from The Lesson! this is what I wrote back to him. I do believe we've done a show about Vegas. It's probably been quite a while. And here's the thing with Vegas is every week Vegas completely changes.
Yes.
You know, we were just out there when? In July?
Yep.
and I just got back from January. Completely different. I didn't even recognize it. That's not true. But no, things change really, obviously, change that quickly. So it's not going to do you too much good, I think, to go back and dig out whatever our old show is that we did about it. But a couple resources I think are great, particularly for the first time, and not sponsors of the show, but CheapoVegas.com, I think, is the most fun website to read. Very complete, and as I told him, don't be turned off by the name, or turned on by the name, I guess, depending on who you are. But they cover everything out there and do a really good job with it, and you'll laugh almost as much as you laugh listening to us. And then, of course, obviously, our good friends at Las Vegas Advisor with that big old coupon book and all those resources as well, too. Those are the two things I would send you to. If you go to those two places, you're going to be in very good hands, I think, when you get out there.
I remember when we both worked for TBT and you wrote that On the Cheap cover story.
Yes, Vegas
on the
I cheap. Did Vegas for $30.
That was a great story. We had a lot of fun with that, designing it and everything, and you writing it. It was a really good time.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. Half those places are closed. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yep. And well, so, you know, from our own personal experiences, you know, of course, we always go to Ellis Island for the steak dinner. And Ellis Island is right behind Bally's, right? I guess it's right behind Bally's, right? And
more about that in the main topic today.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, yeah, so that's my favorite thing. Well, we always have to have that steak dinner at least once while we're out there together. So it's so affordable and so ridiculously good. It's just it's worth the trip. But, you know, that's the other thing he's saying, too. Like, even we couldn't even give you, like, a tournament to go try to play in because it could be different by the time you get there. So... You know, our Vegas columnist this month talked about how the staffs of a lot of these poker rooms are starting to listen to their players. So, yeah, we could tell you to go play a tournament that has 10,000 starting units, and then the players complain about it between now and then, and you go there and it has 20,000. So we have no idea what's going to happen. So,
yeah, here's the other thing, too. You're going out there for 4 or 5 days, it looks like. I mean, you're going to be able to do a tenth of what you can do in Vegas, if you're lucky. And that's if you just don't sleep and you're just moving around. You know, you're going to play some poker for a while, then you're down to, like, you know, a hundredth of what you can do out there. So, you know, just do it. Just have fun and scratch off what you do, and the next time you go back, scratch some more stuff off. You know?
Yeah.
If you try to do all of Vegas in 4 days, you're going to kill yourself.
That's right.
All right, Ken, we are appreciative of your email to our mailbag at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and I'm going to be happy to send you a copy of the new ebook, You Called Me With What? by Rick Danford, which is available for just $1.99 on Amazon.com. Help out these self-published authors like my good buddy Chris here.
Man, I tell you, Ken Allard, he's cleaning up with the swag.
Yeah.
Chris Moneymaker swag, and now this? Man.
And he'll probably notice, too, that he wasn't due for swag for another 2 weeks, but I'm in a charitable mood because it's the New Year. So.
Charitable. Because you're home, and you almost kissed your partner at the airport. So
yeah,
you're feeling good.
And I'm like, you know what? I like this Ken guy a lot. You know, it's tough for me to part with a $1.99 book for him. But, you know, I'm gonna move some mountains and make some calls and make it happen for him. So I want him to have something to read on the plane when he goes out to Vegas.
Awesome. All right, well, Scott's favorite segment of the show, the feedback portion, comes from Travis Velk this week. He says, long-time listener. First-time writer. Gotta love that. He says, I live in Haver, Montana.
Haver is a Harv.
This isn't Brett Favre. It's H-A-V-R-E.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If it's Brett Favre, it's Harv.
Yeah, I think it's Haver.
Haver?
H-A-V-R-E.
Havre.
I am writing in about the bill that is making its way through the legislature right now. You and I had kind of said, why'd they randomly pick 800? He has the reason here. He said, the reason they picked $800... is that the most any one person can win off of a poker machine is $800. So they are just moving it to align with that. So I'm assuming it's like a slot machine that they have that's poker?
I guess like a video poker machine.
Okay. It also makes that you can have up to 16 large stake poker tournaments a year, right? Is that what he's trying to say?
Yeah, large
stake. The legislature has not looked at this bill seen early 1980s. As you know, we don't have large poker rooms in the state except for the reservations, and even some of them are not allowed to have live poker. So $800 thing not makes sense.
Okay. Well, it
kind of
makes more sense.
I mean, why they picked that number is
still doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
At least there's some logic to the nonsensical nature of it.
But
I didn't know about the
tournament thing.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. We'll see.
Well, that all works out for you up there, Travis. And let me know which of the seven pronunciations of your city was correct.
I'm going with Haver.
I don't want all seven people that live there to call me up and
seven. Yeah, seven. You know it's three. It's not seven. Why are you saying that?
That being said, I want to go to Montana so bad. You know, we were just up there. I was like, you know, as close as I could get, as I've been probably in Deadwood last summer. And but even when you're that close, it's still like a 7-day drive.
Yeah.
To get to Montana, but I've heard really good things about it. So
Big Sky, Big Sky.
Maybe when they get the 16 large stake poker tournaments going up there, I'll bring my $800 up and Travis can show me around.
Okay, hey, the Running Aces Harness Partner Minneapolis has announced the schedule and structures for the Anti-Up Midwest Championship, an Anti-Up Poker Tour Series, April 11th to the 21st. Thunder Valley Casino Resort in California will be running satellites for that as well through February. More details on all AUPT events can be found at AntiUpPokerTour.com.
And we're getting a lot of buzz on this, finally. The Hard Rock, Punta Cana, and the Dominican Republic is now accepting bookings for the Anti-Up Poker Tour World Championship event, July 28th, August 3rd. At the luxurious all-inclusive resort, 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as $115, with the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Anti-Up Magazine. Great all-inclusive room rates for adults and children will make this a great poker or family vacation this year. More information at antiupmagazine.com/worldchampionship, including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs and Thunder Valley Casino. We will be announcing a couple more properties very soon.
Now, did you hear what Scott said? All-inclusive.
Yes.
So, it's all-inclusive. Food, everything. Drinks, everything, stuff to do, the tournaments, it's all-inclusive. Come on now. Play with us. We want you to come down and play with us. Well, you and I are going on a cruise in a few days here, but it doesn't mean we don't have more cruises coming up. Walt Strakowski Jr., our 2010 Player of the Year and a single table specialist, will be the pro on our May 2000, which apparently now says 20. May
the
20th.
I know. 20th.
May 20th, the Handy Up Poker Cruise out of Miami.
Sheesh.
Which will spotlight sit and goes. We're going to try to run extra sit and goes during that cruise, so he's going to be the one to teach you how to win them. Rates are guaranteed through March 4th, and we're also sailing out of New York City and Tampa this year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Seneca Salamanca, and Naples-Fort Myers Greyhound Track at antiupcruises.com. Man, we have all these cool websites. It's remarkable.
Bunch of stuff going on. And don't forget our good friends at Dover Downs Hotel and Casino, which we've mentioned 100 times this show because they do so much stuff with us.
Yes.
Up there in the great state of Delaware, has announced that because of player demand, it will now be running an Anti-Up Poker League every single month starting in March. Right now, they got one running through the end of February, so you can still get in on that one, and then it'll be monthly after that. Win an Anti-Up Poker Cruise and a personalized Anti-Up League Champions Jacket. Visit antiupmagazine.com/leagues for all the details, and ask the manager of your favorite poker room to set up a league in their own room. And I'm really looking forward to the first winner from Dover. Unfortunately, he can't make it, but his wife is coming on the cruise next week.
Oh.
And he's a big boy. He's like 6'12 or something.
That would be 7 feet.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But you know, you don't want to be pretentious and say 7 feet, so you make it 6'12, right? You know, it's like when you're a kid. You're he's 18 months. No, he's not. He's a year and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, anyhow, big guy. So we couldn't get him a jacket, but we got him a really nice fleece. So I'm looking forward to seeing that when I pick it up tomorrow. But his wife is super excited to come on the cruise. She's bringing a friend with her. So.
You know, a lot of women do that, too. They're like, oh, I'm 35 and 18 months. No, you're 36 and a half. You're almost 37.
No, I'm not.
All right, let's see what happened on the Anti-Up News Desk this week.
The Poker Players Alliance has urged its New Jersey members to contact Governor Chris Christie to show their support for the online poker bill that is on his desk right now. Sign it, Chris! Executive Director John Pappas also met with one of the governor's aides this week and reported that the meeting went well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
It's got 5 days left, I think.
Yeah, pretty expected.
Sign this thing by February 4th is what I understand, right?
Right, and if he doesn't sign it, it automatically becomes law, isn't that right?
That is correct.
Yay!
So we will probably know before the great monarch of the seas pulls out of Port Canaveral.
So
there are good friends in New Jersey who will be playing online poker this year.
So if somebody, like, you know, kidnapped Governor Chris Christie, the law would automatically come bill, or would they say, oh, wait a minute, he was kidnapped?
Now you're talking about, that's like a plot line from Naked Gun 33 and a third, The Smell of Fear.
Where's O.J. Simpson when you need him? All right.
If it was on Saturday Night Live and I went for the really cheap jokes, I would say someone should deliver a pizza to Chris Christie in New York and tell him to come up and pick it up on that day. But I'm not really cheap with my jokes. So.
Oh, man. Here we go. A bill has been introduced in the Iowa Senate to allow the state's gaming companies to offer online poker, not just to Iowans, but to players in other states where it is legal to do so. The bill passed the Senate last year, but never got a hearing in the House. So when we say it passed last year, was it still this variation where it was legal to do so in other states, or was it just the online one?
That's a good question. I read a legal summary of it this morning, and I got to say I did pay attention to it last year, but I don't really remember.
I don't recall.
I did think the wording about allowing players in other states to be the play is interesting, because that brings up some World Trade Organization problems. Unless it tends to mean, you know, like Nevada, Delaware, and hopefully New Jersey, right. States like that specifically allow it. Because it went into, you know, negotiating compacts between the states, which obviously is very important. So maybe that's what it's getting at.
We'll see
where it goes this year.
Yeah, but another state. There you go. Another state doing it. So we're hoping that it gets through.
Boulders are falling. And finally, a spoiler alert. So we'll give you to the count of five. Five! To mute us or skip ahead a few minutes if you don't want to know who won this year's NBC Heads Up Poker Championship. One, two, three, five. Oh, I like that. You skip it, and then you're like, hey, what happened to four? Boom.
That explains a lot of our bookkeeping errors there, I think.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so Mike the Mouth Matisau won this year's NBC Heads Up Championship, defeating Phil Hellmuth Jr. in a battle of what I'm trademarking as poker's new old guard.
Trademarked.
I did that. I trademarked it last night on Fifth Street Radio. I'm like, you know what? I'm calling these people poker's new old guard. Trademark. Right away. Boom. I win. And then he kept trying to say poker's old guard. No. Poker's new old guard. Get it right.
You got to admit.
To avoid paying me royalties.
You got to admit, though. I mean, that's going to make some serious television. I mean, Matisau and Hellmuth are like best friends, and they both have these personalities that are just blow-ups, and that's got to be a good finale there. And Hellmuth, oh my God, getting to the final again.
Yeah.
He's just incredible. He really is.
He probably has a ton of pencils in his house because he's always number two.
Oh my God. He won it once, didn't he? Yeah, he won it once. But yeah, that's pretty funny.
But yeah, we talked about this on Fifth Street last night about this is a really tailor-made for TV. But then again, the whole event is tailor-made for TV, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're choosing 64 players out of gajillion around the world to play in this thing. You're obviously going to choose players that, generally speaking, are going to either provide very good poker or very good entertainment, and they've got two people that do both in the finals, so you can't script that any better.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun thing to watch. I mean, if it wasn't like that, I probably wouldn't have watched it, but now I probably will watch it. So,
and remember, poker's new old guard trademark. You heard it here first, or second, if you heard the street radio.
Hey, we have a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2 PLO game. The max buy-in is $400. It's early in the night, and we are at an action-heavy table. But these players tend to know what they're doing. If you'll remember from previous episodes, this isn't our strongest game. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with the ace of diamonds, ace of clubs, five of diamonds, five of clubs. A very nice starting hand. From under the gun, we pot it to $7. The plus one makes it 24, and the MP one makes it 41. What's going on here? To make matters worse, the button calls. It's back to us, after the blinds fold, and now we're put to our first decision. Do we pot it again? The MP1 and button have almost identical stacks as ours, about 400, but we've got the plus one covered by about two bills. The MP is an aggressive but smart player. He knows the odds and is better at PLO than we are. We're not going to try to get it all in pre-flop, with such a flop-heavy game as PLO. We call the 41, as does the plus one. There's already 160 in the pot, and the flop is a beauty. Ace of hearts, queen of clubs, jack of clubs. We've flopped strong. So we're going to play this one strong. We make it 100 to go. The plus one folds, but the MP one makes it 260 on top, which is for our stack. The button folds. What do we do?
All right, well, you know, hey, we like to milk all my trips for as much fodder as we can in the podcast because we're not creative enough to come up with multiple main topics.
It's not easy.
Yeah. But no, we actually had a lot of stuff that happened after our last week's show, and then some stuff actually happened before, and so we're going to catch up some folks on some of these travels connected with our Antioch Poker Tour event out at Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa. But let's jump right in and finish up talking about the Antioch Poker Tour event. And, you know, hey, we'll be honest here, because we always are. We don't like to hide our warts. Maybe you do.
I got a little Band-Aid on one of them.
The turnout for our event up there was not exactly what we were hoping for, and certainly are looking for ways to improve it next year, both ourselves and the property. But that being said, there was still a lot of fun. I really enjoyed being out there. And a couple more stories here to fill in, folks. But first of all, our champion was Dale Beaudoin. You know what? I never asked him how to pronounce his name. But I'm going to guess that's what it is.
Okay.
If not, that's how I'd pronounce it.
Okay.
But awesome guy. It was really fun to watch this final table because when they got heads up, he was heads up with one of his friends that actually lives like two apartments away from him.
Oh, wow.
And they play a lot. And so you can imagine that. You know, if you and I were both in a tournament and we end up heads up, that's a lot of fun, right?
Sure.
Or like Mattisau and Helmuth, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, they did a two-way shot for the prize money, but they left $2,000 on the side. And, of course, they had to see who was going to be on the March cover of Antioch Magazine. A lot of fun. It was kind of cool to see. And they had, you know, had railbirds that were like, you know, I don't know which one of you to root for. And really the only one that knew who to root for was Dale's girlfriend. So, but yeah, that was a lot of fun to see it come down like that. And then our good friend, longtime podcast listener, Matt Moody, he's on a tear, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, he made it, he finished 14th in the large lead-up event out at the Thunder Valley Antioch Poker Tour event back in November. At that time, it was his biggest cash ever. I know he was very excited. Obviously disappointed. He was hoping to win more, but biggest cash ever, right? Right. Well, he comes out to Vegas and buys into the main event and makes the final table, finishes, I believe, 6th or 7th. I can't remember now. But whatever it was, it's now his new biggest cash. So, two Antioch Tour events, two career caches for Matt Moody.
Wow, 100%.
Yes, yeah. Doing really well.
Maybe he should be our online, on our boat pro one of these days coming up.
Well, he's looking hard at coming down to Punta Cana, so, you know, I just cool. Want folks know that the tournament field is going to be very tough if Matt Moody comes down.
Very cool.
But, you know, I showed up, and he's like, hey, you know, I brought you and Chris something, so when you get to the tournament room, let me know. So I get there, I'm like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, oh, I'm doing well. And he comes over, and he gives me these awesome custom-made wood card covers. And I'll give you yours on Sunday, by the way.
All right.
But one for you, one for me. And they were made by a good friend of his named Tim Cibula. And this gentleman sells his wares on Etsy, which is kind of like an eBay for artists, if folks don't know.
Oh.
As Would I Kid You, WOOD. He kills me. but definitely look up his stuff. It's really nice. I think you're really going to like yours, Chris. And he personalized them, too. Mine says Short Stack Ninja on it.
Awesome.
I think yours says Blowhard or something like that.
I'm sure it does.
I can't remember exactly what it said. But very nice gift. We always appreciate when our listeners give us stuff like that. And definitely check out Tim's work on Etsy and get your own. You know, and here's the thing, Chris. I like to play a lot of these lead-up events, as we talked about last week. But I did say, you know what? I don't think I'm ever going to play a main event because I never want to be in a position where I'm going to end up on the cover of my own magazine, right?
Yep.
And for whatever reason, I'm like, when I was out there, I'm like, you know what? You know, maybe I get in the tournament. Maybe I do well. I get on the final table. You know what? I'll let somebody else win. But at least I'll play and maybe make a lot of coin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have never thought that. So I got there late one night, and they had a main event satellite going on, and I thought I missed it. I was out at a good, what I call Scott Long's personal Vegas kitchen, the Ellis Island, which we talked about. got back late, and I'm like, and they're like, hey, you know, we're still taking registration. I'm like, really? All right, you know, and I had that nice little run of caches early. I'm like, all right, put me in. So I put down none other than ChipJet is at my table. And it might have been the worst satellite I've ever played in my entire life. I was as timid as you can be, and I know our listeners right out there are, like, pausing right now going, I was more timid against Scott Ginn at the table. He's like a rabbit's baby at the table. But yeah, it didn't do so well. Unfortunately, Chip didn't make it either, unfortunately. So I get it bust out, and finally got in. They have this great 6-12 limit hold'em game at Red Rock. And their cash games were packed this entire tournament, which was great to see. One of the reasons they had a $90,000 club Royal Flush promotion. If you got a Royal Flush in clubs, you get $90,000. That's pretty nice.
Wow.
I flopped four to it once. I didn't get there. And then another time I had ace queen of clubs and I raised and everybody folded and I flipped it up and it acted like I was kicking a dog with a nail on my shoe. Why would you raise with that? That's $90,000 you just threw away. And I'm like, dudes. Under the gun. There hasn't been a raise and take it at this table ever. We're playing limit poker. I'm supposed to assume that you guys are all going to fold? Crazy people. But no, I really enjoyed that game. It was a 6-12, and then it killed to 10-20 rather than 9-18.
Okay.
So a very, very fun game. Unfortunately, I dropped 3 bills at it, but I was doing well for a while, I thought. But the highlight of it was everybody kind of knows everybody there. It's kind of the same group that comes in. They get the game started at like 11 in the morning. It usually starts the break up at 3 o'clock. Everybody has to get home to the family unless some other people come in to get it up. So the same, it's almost like a home game. With folks, and so this woman sits down with a nice big red hat, and I don't know, about half an hour after playing, and she's like crushing the table, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
She looks over and she's like, you're with the Andy at PokerCast, aren't you? And I'm like, I guess I am. She's like, are you Scott? I'm like, do I look like Chris? I'm the pretty one. And she's like, oh my gosh! And she's like, you know, I listen to you guys all the time on my iPod. She throws me her phone or iPhone, whatever it is. And I'm like, you guys are so funny. And I'm like, and she's like, oh, so great to meet you. I'm like, oh, that's nice. So we were chatting for a little bit. And then she takes a seat move, so she sits closer to me. And then she actually shows me her iPhone to prove to me that she does listen. And she's like, I've got a lot of podcasts on here, but look, yours is always first. A little icon was up in the upper right hand or left hand side.
That's because alphabetical.
Shut up.
Not of importance.
Don't ruin my moment here. But Ruth was hilarious. So if you're out there, Ruth, I enjoyed playing with you. And she was trying to get some other folks to listen to the show too. And she was like, "You gotta listen to these guys talk about the 6-card hold'em. It's awesome." And again, that's not even us. That was one of our listeners that suggested that to us, and then we've just taken the ball and run with it. But. Very nice just to be randomly talking about the show and actually know about it. So,
cool.
Really enjoyed ourselves out there. And then remember, the NEA Poker Tour next stop will be out at Running Aces in Minnesota in April. Already getting a lot of buzz out there, so very much looking forward to getting out there. But, of course, while I was out there, it's a long time to be in Vegas. You know, I got off property in the morning before the tournament started and bumped around and saw some old friends and see some new stuff. And just like we said at the top of the show, Vegas changes so much so quickly. Stopped off at Treasure Island. They get a brand new room. You know, it used to be like down in that hallway section thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little off the beaten path.
Yeah.
Now it's been moved over to near the slot, so at least it's in your gaming now. And right next to a Chicago hot dog stand, which I think is a perfect place for a poker room to be. I'd be going out there and getting hot dogs all day and getting even fatter. But definitely check it out. It's a nice little room there. And then I went across the street to the Venetian, which, of course, just was expanding the room when we were out there in the summer, right?
Yep.
Massive. I mean, it is absolutely massive. I mean, you know, not in the lines of, like, you know, a Commerce out in California. That's just a big barn of tables. But definitely really impressive to see this 60-something table room in Vegas, you know, and for a property to make that kind of commitment to poker, too, you know.
Absolutely.
and they got down to the stratosphere. That poker room hasn't moved, but they finally added one of those little semi-private walls, glass walls there to kind of block out some of the slot noise. And players seem to really like it, so that's kind of cool. We got downtown one day, which I always like, and talked to the manager of the Golden Nugget, and he sent me his tournament schedule for the Grand Series, you know, the big event they do in the summer every year. Lots and lots of mixed games on there, so our Antiup fans are really going to enjoy playing those. And then he said something very interesting. He said because they do all these mixed games, they draw a lot of Germans for their tournament. And they actually got some kind of German poker site, not a online site, but like a poker forum or news site or something like that, that's actually sponsoring one of the events and bringing more players over. I thought that was kind of cool. I never thought about that.
Wow, that's interesting.
I mean, I guess it makes sense that, you know, a lot of our European listeners actually really enjoy the mixed games. But for them to actually make the trek over there, they're actually doing like a tournament for Hawaiians too. You have to be a Hawaiian native to play in one of them too, you know. So really do some interesting things there.
That is interesting.
And of course, a couple months ago, we had our good friend Randy Kiefer from the Hollywood Poker Open on to talk about their poker series at all the Hollywood properties. Or at least most of them. They were actually out at the M Resort in Vegas while we were out there, and you know, they've really put a lot of money and marketing behind this whole event, wherever it is, and it's really paying off. I went out there, and they had twice as many people show up than they had tables to accommodate them, and I believe that happened all weekend too. So it was really a nice scene to see that people were really getting behind the. This new poker concept that the company's really promoting very well.
Hmm.
I also stopped off at Aria, and you know what? I really wanted to see this multi-action table.
Yeah.
Remember when we talked about that?
Yeah.
It's, if folks haven't heard about it or missed the show, we talked about it. But it's a table with two dealers almost facing each other, but not really, kind of, you know, offset a little bit, right? But players are playing two different games at the same time. Now, it could be the same game, but two different stacks, and they get two hands each time, and so the idea, I guess, is to get twice as many hands as possible, right? And I've always was a little dubious of it, because it seemed a little confusing, but then again, I get confused by everyday life. There wasn't a game going on while I was out there, but I sat and looked at the table really closely. And I gotta say, Chris, I don't know who plays this, or I should say who plays this. I mean, it's a great concept, but I was talking about this to another manager. From an operational standpoint, I don't see the benefit of this. You know, you got two dealers, so it's a double the labor for the same table. And then this table, you can't just put this at your normal table. You can't say, hey, new multi-action game taking place on table six. You have to have a special table for it. So I don't know. It seems like it's an expensive way to go, but maybe it takes off. I don't know. But
so when you say a special table, is it a special shape of a table, or is it just a different felt?
They got two dealer boxes on it.
Wow.
With the, you know, the chip trays and everything, and of course then you got the felt obviously as well too. But so that's what I'm saying is you can't just take on a normal table, and you can't put two dealers there. You get to have two chip trays and. And definitely, I think you got to have the felt, or you go crazy trying to figure out where your stacks are and stuff.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I'm always happy with these folks that are innovating out there. But this one, I think, is going to be a little tough to take off just because of that. You know, I don't know how many rooms are going to want to buy special tables for this game unless they know it's going to be going on all the time.
Weird.
And of course, you know, when I travel, I like to try to work in some fun stuff out there. So, you know, I was going to meet a friend over at Ellis Island one night, and happened to be near the Tropicana. So they had this, since we've been out there, they've opened not one, but two big mob historical kind of things, right?
Yeah.
One is downtown, which is an actual mob museum. I think they actually call it the Museum of Organized Crime and Law Enforcement. And it's a non-profit, and it's downtown and you know, kind of a cool place. And then up on the Tropicana on the Strip, and I don't, this is not non-profit, they call it the Mob Attraction. And pretty much the same stuff, it sounds like, though. But I can't say that for certain, because I go to the Mob Attraction, walk all the way to the back, get there, and they're like, sorry, we closed at 4 today. I'm like, what? You're close at 8. kind of private party. So I didn't get to see that, but I did go to the Mob Museum. And that, it didn't really overly impress me.
Oh.
So, sorry. But it's much cheaper than the Mob Attraction. So, folks want to go out. But you know, I'm a big Mob guy, so I knew all that kind of stuff. So I guess there wasn't anything that really was new there. But I didn't mention Ellis Island. Got out there for the steak dinner. It took me actually all week. You know, it's usually our first stop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I got in late, though, and so I didn't make it out to actually the second last day for the steak. But I went out early, met a friend, and you know, when we were out there last time, the same folks are like, you know what, hey, we should get the ribs. And we're like, no, come to Ellis Island, you get the steak.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, the ribs are good. So I'm like, oh, I'll just have the ribs. Chris, I am a believer now.
Really?
$12.99 for a full rack of ribs with all the sides, and they were to die for.
Hmm.
Almost wanted to buy a pig and just take it home so I could make my own. But they changed the things. You know, now you actually have to take your little Ellis Island Passport Club card and go to one of the little kiosks and print out a coupon to get the special prices. You can't just order it and give them your card.
Oh.
But you know what's cool about it is that when you go and put your card in, they're like, congratulations, you won a discounted steak dinner today. So I think you could just keep going back and winning all day. You're just feeling bad. You know, you lost a lot of money. And then this was really fun. You know, we're out at Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa. And I won't say way off the strip, but it's a good distance off the strip in an area that, you know, tourists don't normally go to. And it's right at the foot of the Red Rock Canyon. So I could see the mountains from my room every morning. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get over there one of these days and hike it. So I went over there on the last day, Sunday, and I went up there and I studied the trail things. You know, I went to the little trail guide lady, and I'm like, you know what? I want to see animals. And she's like, all right, you're going to take this trail, and you might see some bighorn sheep. And I'm like, awesome, right? So I get there, park the car, get off. And it's rated at moderate. They had a couple strenuous and a couple light ones, and I'm like, you know, I'm not a wimp. I don't need a light one. I'm not going for a stroll here. I'm on a hike, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same time, you know, I didn't bring any, like, you know, provision, so I'm not going to do the strenuous one, right? So so I head off down the trail, the moderate one, and about 10 minutes into it, I'm, like, climbing boulders and stuff, and I'm ducking under trees, and I'm like, what's the strenuous one got to be like? And so I'm getting a little farther, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think I'm on a trail, so I keep looking behind, and I'm thinking I should be, like, Hansel and Gretel and dropping breadcrumbs because I'm going to be left out here. I looked at my cell phone, no service at all. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be like the skeleton that Billy Crystal finds in City Slickers 6. And I'm really seriously starting to get worried. And then all of a sudden, I see another human up on this ridge above me, right? And then another one. And I'm like, So I climb all the way up there. It's like a 90-degree angle, you know? I'm like cheating death. I get up there, clearly marked trail. At some point, I got off the trail and was just like freestyling.
Jeez.
Very dangerous, I think, by the way.
Explains why you always need GPS wherever you go.
That is true. And I did have a GPS. In my phone, that didn't work, and I didn't get a service. But anyhow, long story short, I can't believe it's taken me all this time to go out to Vegas. You know, you spend all the time on the strip, and you get exhausted and tired, right? I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, it was really cool to know. I didn't know that was out there. I mean, I guess I knew it was out there, but I didn't know all the trails and stuff, so... You know, folks that are going out to Vegas and don't just want to spend the time on the strip getting $12 cocktails in the shape of Eiffel Towers, you might want to go out there and do a little outdoorsy stuff. It's kind of a cool area.
You hear that, Ken Allard? First-timers out there, go hit the trail.
Go trail. Just stay on the trail. Now, before all this, I was in California. I mentioned that last week. So just a couple updates from out there. I stopped off at Morongo, and they've moved their poker room. It's now... right by the front door, which is, I think, is always a great location. You know, poker players don't like to walk through the casino,
right.
Too. And then you get that walk-in traffic, too. And they've really started a lot of promotions there, too. So if you haven't been in that room lately, go back. They're giving away a lot of cash through the jackpot fund. And then visit a couple other properties as well, too. Our good friend Santa Paula, we're talking to them. Hopefully we'll be doing an Annie Up event there in March. It won't be an Annie Up poker tour, but something with Annie Up's name on it, so... stay tuned for that. And the first night I got to town, I was hanging out, obviously, with our great ambassador, Dave Palm, in Los Angeles. And the dude just cracks me up every time I'm out there. I think you might have remembered last time I was out there, we went to see that Angels no-hitter game and just had a lot of fun. This time we decided to play some cards, and we played Omaha. And So we got seated, and it's a must-move table, right? So I sat down first, I played a while, and then eventually they moved everybody up, and I was next up to move. So they came over, and they're like, all right, we need to move. We're like, so then Dave, you know, he's like, you know, we wanted to sit there. It's a social game. We wanted to sit and chat. You know, we don't get to see each other once or twice a year, right? So he turns to the lady, he's like, you know, hey, are you anticipating a second seat? Can we move together? And she said, all right, come back. I'm like, okay. We need you guys to move now. Like, oh, so we can move the same table? Yeah, yeah, all right, whatever. So anyhow, so we end up moving and getting seats next to each other. And I guess what we were talking about is they had probably 10, maybe 12 Omaha games going. At what point do you not do a must-move table anymore?
Yeah, really.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of must-moves. Anyhow, I understand it. I mean, if it's a hard-to-get game going, and you want to keep that main game going and not dilute it by having two shorthanded games. But once you get to, like, even three tables, I don't know if you need it anymore, let alone 10 or 12. I don't remember how many it was, but whatever, it was ridiculous. It just causes so much confusion. I mean, and people, that many tables. The other thing, too, is there's somebody getting up at every table, like, every hand. So, I mean, our must-move table, they were coming over left and right. Hey, all right, we need you. And I don't know. It just didn't make sense to either one of us. But I wonder if other people think we're being crazy for that.
How was Dave's back, by the way? He hurt his back.
Yeah. I was actually even surprised he came out. But he seemed to be doing all right. But certainly still in a lot of pain. So hopefully he's doing better now. You know, and then there's this thing called In-N-Out Burger, Chris. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes.
Apparently it's legendary.
Yes.
You know, people, 98% of people will choose that over sex, is what I've told. That's how good this place is, right? And all the times I've been out west, I've never gone. I can't explain it. Maybe I've just never been in the mood for a burger and been near an In-N-Out Burger. So this time I'm driving. I was actually driving to Morongo, and I saw a big billboard for some kind of burger. And I'm like, you know what? That's what I want for lunch today. So I got done with there and decided to find an In-N-Out Burger, used the old GPS. Went in there. Wow. You know, usually this stuff doesn't live up to the hype, you know, because people are like, for years, are telling, oh, In-N-Out Burger, you got to go there. It's going to change your life. And I'm like, yeah, right. It's just a freaking burger, right? No, it's not just a freaking burger. It is a creation of Darwin. It is that good. So I actually went back the second day, so I had an In-N-Out Burger twice. So when you see the on our statements this month, you'll see that I went to In-N-Out Burger twice.
Oh.
Actually saved the company a lot of money, by the way.
So it was like you were in and out and in again.
Yes, I like it. Very good. And, you know, I will say this. The food is, again, to die for. Absolutely amazing. But the In-N-Out name, a little bit of a misnomer. I get in there, order, like, all right, you're number 99. I'm like, okay. Number 36, your order's ready. There's no in and out. There's in and in and in and in and in and eventually out. That's what they should call it.
I was just about to announce our new sponsor, but now that's been killed.
No, I mean, it's just showing how busy it is. So they're being very successful.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went to this place, the In-N-Out Burger, the first day. It was in this city called Hemet, California, I guess. Maybe Hemet? I don't know. H-E-M-E-T. Nice little town, right? But I get out of the In-N-Out Burger, and I'm like, okay, I need to continue going south down to Pechanga and Palo, right? Go to pull out of the parking lot, right turn only. I'm like, all right, I need to go left. I'm like, all right, maybe I can go, let me drive through the parking lot. It's one of the big strip malls, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to find another way out, so I get to the next one, right turn only. Like, I need to go left. So I keep trying to go to the next one, and I'm like, maybe if I go to a different block, they'll let me turn right. Go to a different block, or left. I mean, I go to another block, right turn only. I'm like, I got to go left on this block, too. Sometime I'm going to have to get left in this town. I mean, I feel like Clark Griswold on European Vacation. So then I finally like, all right, fine. I'll turn right as it tells me to, and then I'll do a U-turn, right? So I turn right, go down to the next corner, no U-turn.
I don't know what to tell you, buddy.
Well, I mean, here's the thing is, you've made this drive with me before, right? There's like nothing for eons out there, right?
Right.
And now there's this metropolis called Hemet with all this new stuff. I'm convinced that has been created because people get there and can't leave. They're like, you know what? All right, I can't turn left. I'm never going to leave this place. So we might as well get an In-N-Out burger here. If they had a NASCAR race there, it would never end.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
all right, so then after Vegas, I did fly down for a quick trip in New Mexico, in and out there. working with Buffalo Thunder, an absolutely gorgeous property down there, hoping to do some more business with Annie up, so stay tuned on that. But for folks that have been to that room, it's actually in Santa Fe, so it's about 45 minutes away from Albuquerque. But they recently moved the room, when I was there, one of the players, it's been the first time he's been there since it moved, and he was raving about it, so obviously I hadn't seen it before, so I don't know what to compare it to, but it's very nice now. Closed it off by glass, you don't get any of that slot machine noise or the smoke or anything from the casino. And then inside, they have like these glass, big, huge sliding glass doors, so they can even partition the room off into two rooms if they want. So they kind of put like the high limit players and the tournament players in one room, and they can close it off if the high limit players don't want to hang out with us little plebes, you know, during the day.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. A couple things I thought were neat. They put new felt on the table, and you know they had a little betting line oval thing, right?
Yeah.
That everybody has now, but they made the betting oval like narrow, almost like a torpedo shape. And I really like that because it gives you, you know, one of the things that's weird about this is that normally they put those big betting lines on there. And if you're like in like the five seat, you know, you have like as much personal space as you do in an airplane.
Yeah.
And then if you're like in like the seven seat, you know, you can invite girls over to hang out with you and stuff. the way they did it, so everybody has the same amount of space for their chips and plenty of space too. And, you know, you don't need to – plus, I think it also helps the dealers. I mean, how many times have we been at games where people sheepishly just put their chips right at the line?
Yeah.
And, of course, that's 9 miles away from the dealer, which always happens to be, like, a 23-year-old woman who's, like, 4'12" and can't reach it, you know? This kind of forces all those chips together, so it's even better for the dealers. I really like it. I think it's pretty cool. I wish more people would do their felts this way. And then I looked over on one side, and they have this huge charging station, 12 outlets there, mm-hmm. and a little shelf, and you can plug all your phones in there. This is one of the things I was actually telling the manager, you know, this is one of the in the freeform question on our reader survey this year. People said, hey, how about a charging station? And I think they might have been half kidding, but he actually did one there.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then really, you know, I've been to Albuquerque before, didn't make it out to Buffalo Thunder, but... you know, Albuquerque in general, the tournaments are pretty low, $25, $30 a day. Not terrifically big cash games. But at Buffalo Thunder, they do a really good job of scheduling games. So twice a week, they have a 20-40 limit game going there.
Jeez.
That's even hard to find in Vegas these days.
Yeah.
They also get a 5-5 Omaha game, a pot limit Omaha game going twice a week as well, too, which is a pretty big game as well, too. So they're doing some really interesting things up there, some games that you might not expect to be up there. Terrific dealers, too. Had a lot of fun. I played one tournament there, and they did really good. Except for one thing, when we did the race-off, you know, at the end of level two or whatever it is, when they took the green chips off the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we colored them all up, and then we put their chips out. And the dealer, you know, normally, this is the way I've always seen it. Maybe it's not normal. The dealer puts down a card for each of the chips in order, right?
Yep.
If you have two in front of you, you bam, bam, you get two cards. He actually did one card to each player and then went back around, and if you had another second chip, you put another one down, and if you had three, then he went back around and gave you another one.
Yeah.
Never seen that before, have you?
No, I've never seen it that way, which it makes sense to me, but I've never seen it that way done.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes like dealing euchre, right? It probably doesn't matter which way. It's just personal preference. But
right.
I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. And then when he got up, I heard the other dealer say, you know what, you can just give him two cards. Oh, really? So I guess he didn't know. But really good dealers, though. So I had a lot of fun there. And then as I was leaving, I went over to the restaurant to get some dinner for the night. Open up the menu. Prime rib, $15.99. I'm like, eh. And they're like, but always $9.99 with your Players Club card. I'm like, $6 off! All I need to do is get the card. So I order it, and they're like, yeah, do you have a Players Club card? I'm like, no, but I'm going to get one right now. They're like, all right. So I run over to the Players Club card and or booth, and get my card, and boop, 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 and then my lady says, this is so weird. And I'm like, what? And she's like, I think the lady next to you has your same birthday. And I wasn't paying attention, whatever. And so I turned to her, and she's like, yeah, March 22nd. I'm like, yeah, that's when I was born. They're like, oh, how cool. And I'm like, she kind of looked like about my age. So I'm like, 72? And she's like, yeah, 72. I have never met anybody in my life born on my exact birthday. Have you?
Oh, yeah. I graduated high school with a kid named Brady. We were born about a half an hour apart.
Wow.
Yeah, I was born at like 5:30 a.m. and he was born at like 6 a.m. And I used to always hold it over him. He's like, oh, I'm a half an hour older than you, you know, busting his butt. But yeah, that's the only person my whole life I ever met. Same day, same exact day, you know, and everything. But yeah, it's happened to me once.
Well, that's a nice story, but I asked you if you ever met anybody that was born on my birthday.
Oh, on your birthday? I don't know. I think I do know somebody with your birthday. Either that or it's their anniversary. I can't remember, but...
Well, you know me, so the answer you should be.
But she must have been like, wow, I look great for my age then.
Oh, absolutely, yes. You're like, oh, and then she over, she's like, because you do that, you get, every time you sign up, you get one of those little free play coupon things. But there, instead of just giving you a normal $5, they have you push a little button on the computer, you know, pick a coin,
yeah,
and you could win up to $500 in free play. Of course, everybody only wins five, or at least right. When I was there. But right. So she's over there, she's in line to do that, and I'm next. And then she looks over my shirt and she's like, what's your shirt say? And I'm like, oh, this is gonna be wild. We had the same birthday, and then she knows Annie up, and she probably listens to the show or something, right? And she's like, oh, I thought it said antlers.
Antler spray. I wanted to recover from this injury that I have.
And I'm like, yeah, sorry, I'm not Ray Rice. So.
Ray Lewis.
They're all the same. Always Ravens. But yeah, a good trip. I'm glad to be home finally, and looking forward to leaving again on Monday for the cruise and regaling our troops with our cruise exploits on next week's show.
Yeah, of course, and I expect a shorter show next week because we'll be doing it on the ship and posting it on Saturday likely, so be prepared for that.
When's the streak going to end? We should have a contest to see the first person that mentions it. Ow, the streak is over!
I get that every week on Twitter. If I post it a minute too late, or, oh, God forbid I post it on a Friday, the actual day we say we're supposed to post it. Is the streak over? Where's my show? Right, calm down. And the streak does end, but some people are going to, like, literally keel over, I think.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, we got a home game hand of the week this week. I always like those because you get a little more craziness going on, right?
Cool.
Certainly in our home game, you get craziness going. But it comes from Ed in Southern California. I don't really know why he didn't invite me to the game, but whatever.
Yeah.
Just out there, right?
Yeah.
In fact, actually, I think he might have, but I think he offered to meet me somewhere, but I could be wrong. But anyhow, It's a home game, but he says it's a larger home game, at least for us. $300 to $1,000 buy-in.
That's a pretty big home game. For us, it would be a really big home game.
I don't think there's enough Skittles at the gas and sip for us to play $300 to $1,000
buy-in. Wow.
And get this, it's a 1-2 no-limit hold'em with a mandatory $4 straddle. It's a pretty big buy-in for a 1-2 game, isn't it?
Isn't that just a 1-2-4 game?
Well, I guess, but...
Okay. Well, if it's mandatory, then it's not. Then it's a blind, the third blind. So just call it 1-2-4.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Omaha stuff. Usually they do that to avoid the whole pot limit, the pot problems. You know, it's a 1-2 with a $5 mandatory bring-in.
Yeah.
But I guess you don't have to actually post. It's not a straddle, so...
Yeah. 1-2-4.
He said, after a number of reloads, the villain who was not in his hand was up to $3,000. Wow. Quality of play was high. I think we're going to have the hardest 1-2 home game we could make. Sounds like it. It says all the players play 2-5 and the number play 5-10.
That's
what's interesting about this is that in our home game, we play 2-4 Skittle, which is, I guess, generally below and what we play. And it is much tougher. Much more competitive, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Kind of proves that it's not the stakes. It's not the stakes. It's the players.
It's the importance you place on the stakes, and if everyone puts the same importance on it, then you'd be playing for one penny, two penny. If it's important to you, then you're going to make it a tough game. Now, this guy, had a number of reloads, right? So even though he's up to $3,000, he could be just even for the night or whatever.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just want to make sure that's what we're hearing here. Okay.
But obviously he couldn't buy him for $3,000.
So right, right.
Taking his last buy-in and tripled up.
Okay.
Somewhere in the
neighborhood. Yeah.
All right, so it's eight-handed. It says under the gun, which is not the straddle, so I guess technically undergun plus one. Opens for $15, which apparently is the standard raise in this game. And he has 360 behind and described as a loose aggro. The hijack calls to 15, and he has $410, who is also a loose aggressive player. However, he's been tight most of the night.
Okay.
Maybe he's got like a rent payment due tomorrow or something, right?
Okay.
Bold to the button who calls the $15. He has 500. He's also aggressive, but might be the best player at the table. He's a local pro at one of the local tribal casinos.
Okay.
And our hero is in the small blind with pocket aces. We have, a raise of the straddle and then $2 to us.
Jeez. Well, obviously I'm going to raise here. I don't think a call is in order because that's just asking for way too much trouble, especially these players are pretty tough. And so let's see. We got a 15 raise and a call. Plus guys.
Yeah. 48 bucks in the pot right now.
48 in the pot.
Counting the blinds.
Yeah, I have no reason not to bet pot here. You know, something around maybe $50 or $60 probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this kind of game, you know, I guess maybe that's the first discussion we have. In this game with a lot of aggressive players, these are the hands I like. I mean, you don't get them very often, and people don't give you credit for them, right?
Mm.
So, you definitely need to build a pot with it, I think, and make those people pay when they try to three barrel bluff you on the flop with nothing.
Yeah.
So you said pot, so about raised of about what, 45?
Well, no, I was thinking
for on top.
50, about 50 or 60. Yeah, on top. I was thinking about to about 50 or 60. Just thinking that if I was going to three time the 45, $15 bet to 45 plus another caller in there, so make it 60. So probably around 55, 60 bucks, something like that.
All right, well, that's exactly what our hero did. Raised to 55.
Hmm.
And he has 500 bucks in front of him. And actually, I should say our hero. We're playing it from this player's point of view. We don't know who our hero is.
Oh, okay.
But the small blind is also described as a local pro at Deity Casino who grinds a 2-5 game. And he's aggressive, but not one you would call aggro.
Okay, so he's aggressive when he wants to be, but he's not always aggressive, is basically what he's saying.
I guess.
Okay.
There you go. That makes sense, I guess.
Okay.
All right, so the big blind folds, the straddle folds, the end of the gun calls our raise, and now the hijack raises to 140, and the button gets out of the way, and it's back on us.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too ABC here, but is there any reason not to get it in now? I mean, I know I had 500, but why would I just call here? There's no reason to call, so I would, you know, this guy may have kings, and he's not going to be able to fold, and we want that, so yeah. Why wouldn't I just let it all in now? I just, you know, if I were to re-raise, it would be roughly three times that, which is, what, 420, and I already have 55 out there, so that's all my money, so I'm just going to shove in. Why wouldn't I just shove with aces? That's a nice pot to take right there. If you only have 500 in front of you, and you're about to take down 250 or so.
Yep.
You know,
and don't have to see a flop.
And don't have to see a flop with it at all. Why wouldn't you just shove? And if you get called, yay! You have the best hand possible. So I can't call here. That would be too tricky, and you might get yourself into trouble. Why not just shove and make this guy realize that you have aces, and he's going to let it go or call you as a massive dog? So it's pretty clear to me. I would raise all in.
Yeah, and that's the discussion. I think that the reason they sent this hand to us. So here's kind of the thought process that they're talking about their game. The small blind actually decided to call in this situation. And they said his reason is that re-raising would turn his hand over. And he feels, based on previous experience, that the end of the gun will call and most likely jam almost any flop. But now when pressed on it, he admits that he would fold jack-jack in the spot. It's unclear what he would do with ace-king. So an argument is that by calling, he turns his hand over, and by raising, he turns his hand over.
So no matter what you do, you're turning your hand over?
It's kind of what it sounds like.
If you call, you're turning your hand over. If you raise, you're turning your hand over. Well, then then why not raise? What's the difference? Get all the money in if Casey has king-king. You know, I mean, this is, we're talking about, what, 15 raises at this point now? Well, Ami guys raise and called and re-raised here. So, I mean, I'm thinking that it doesn't matter. Why not? I don't care if my hand is, yeah, I have ace-ace. Yes, I have ace-ace, and I'm glad to take down $250 when I only have 500 in front of me. I just improved my stack by 50% on without even seeing a flop if they fold. And if they don't, if they call, we're way ahead. Or we're even. They have ace-ace too, and nothing's going to happen. So I don't see any reason to call here at all.
You know what happens when you both have ace-ace, right?
Yeah, someone makes a four-card flush.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it happened to me once. So.
Happens all. It's guaranteed. Yeah. It's like TDA rules.
Well, then you're at a 50-50, so you're still a coin flip for your stack. So, but no, really, I mean, I just a call to me is just a nightmare.
Yeah, okay, so let's back up a little bit. I mean, before we've come to the conclusion that either action turns our hand over, what about this thought beforehand that if you do re-raise here, it does turn your hand over? Because I tend to think about this for a while. You know, it's a raise, a re-raise, and now the fourth raise. You got to be, now at this point, the only way you can make that raise again is with aces.
Yeah, no, and I agree, but I don't really care. I want them to fold or to call. One or the other, I don't really care what's going to happen. But if I just call, then I'm screwed because any kind of flop comes out that could be anything that could scare me. They can make a set. They could have ace-king, and it comes queen-jack-10. You know, who knows what happens, but I'm happy to improve my stack by 50% or get it in as a huge favorite to double up. So... Right. I don't care either way. I just don't care that they know my hand. I don't care. It's because if I'm all shoved in, the call means they know you have ace-ace, and if they can beat ace-ace after the flop, then they're going to do it. You know what I mean? They're going to know that they have you pinned, and they're going to just milk it for all they can. If they flop, let's say they have something like 7-7 or 10-10, and if flop comes 10-4 deuce rainbow, they know they're going to get all your money out of you. But if you shove with aces and they have tens, they have no idea they're going to hit their 8-1 set. You know, and to me, it's a no-brainer. It's just no-brainer. I mean, I realize there are ways to play outside the box and whatever, but in this situation, I'm happy to take down $250. And if I'm getting it all in with this guy, I mean, his raise to me makes it sound like it's a big pair. I mean, why? Yeah, you know, that's a
queens, right? Yeah.
That is a tough hand to raise with again with nothing. So if he's got to have a big pair like queens or kings, then he's not going to be able to fold when we shove anyway, and we're happy about it. So I just can't see any reason to fold here. I mean, to just call here.
Okay. It says small blind states that he feels the hijack is queen queen plus since his villain has done this before a queen queen, which is what we're saying, and that calling is the same as raising when it comes to this villain. Really sure what that means, but what small blind wants is the undergun to put more money in. So by calling, which he has to do this in mind, he loses control of the hand, and now only has the under the gun has control. So so there's a third person in the hand, and he's trying to get money. My experience is I don't want three people with aces. I want to be heads up.
No, exactly. You know, some people say that you want one or two opponents. I've seen that and I've read that, but. Really, you're going to want to race. And if I shove, you know what I mean? If I don't, then you're racing four cards to whatever the outcome is. You know, whether it's two flop sets, you know, or two people trying to flop a set. I mean, or, you know, just a really bad coordinated wet board or whatever. So I don't care that it's a third person. I know you want to try to get his money too, but what you're going to end up doing is costing yourself money if you just call and let him in. You know, and I just don't like that. I love doubling my stack, but... I'll also love making 50%. Every time I got into a hand, I got 50% of my stack back.
Absolutely.
I'd be happy as hell. So
do it every single time. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just don't see any reason to keep this guy in.
All right. So the under the gun player does call, and the discussion is he does so because he thinks the hijack is making a play and never has hands like ace ace or king king. Wow, that's kind of ridiculous because you.
Never
matter who you are, you're going to get those hands at some point.
Yeah.
But I get the point that he.
Right. He's saying that he does that with anything. Yeah.
That ace king or some other pocket pair is likely. So the plan is just to call and jam all flops. If the hijack is making a play and a small blind has an ace king type hand, this could work out.
Well, it's hand of the week, so we know it's not going to work out.
Yeah, we're taking a pretty big risk out here. I mean, again, I mean, we don't play these levels, so I mean, this is one of these weird hands where I feel not really justified in trying to get into the mindset of this. But I think you're taking it for me for a recreational 1-2, not $300 to $1,000 buy-in with a bunch of hyper aggressive players. I think you're taking a lot of risk figuring out, trying to think that the hijack is weak and the small blind is not as strong as they could be, and that you're going to be able to get them to fold here on any flop. That's tough, I think.
Here's the deal. When I play and I'm thinking like that about trying to keep people in, I'm doing it later in the hand when I have the nuts or when I have a drawing hand and I need more money to make it worth my draw, that kind of thing. That's when I'm thinking, all right, what do I do here to keep the guy behind me in? Now, when you have a huge advantage, but there's still five cards to come, and you could potentially be racing four cards or playing against four cards, you know, and two different players who are in different spots, and you're not at all in any power position, you're in the small blind, I'm happy to be heads up or to get my money in. And I just think you're going to be in a lot of trouble if you let one more guy in. Just ship it now and be happy with what you win, and if not, be happy that you're an 80% favorite over somebody. So,
right, but what I was asking about was the under-the-gun player who's in the middle of this.
Oh, I know.
He's the one that's saying that he's going to call and then jam every flop.
But still, you're still running the risk of the other guy.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. You got two people that have raised and re-raised, now re-raised again. I don't know what jamming the flop is going to do against these players. Particularly when you look at your ship stack. I mean, now we're left, under-gun is left with 220, the hijack is 270, I don't know what the small blind has, but probably in that same range, and a pot of 441 here. I can't imagine that this bet of 200 is going to scare anybody away with any flop, right?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
maybe one of them, but the other one's going to call you. And
yeah,
if your plan is to jam with anything, and then you're going to get called by a hand that obviously has you beat unless you flop really lucky.
Well, that's just it, though. I mean, is it that way? Are they going to call? You know, I don't know. I'd rather be heads up. And then I'd rather be heads up and have it all in before the flop and take it down. And if I can't take it down, I don't think I'm going to get two callers to my shove. If I call and if I shove,
again,
and
I'm talking about
calls,
the other gun, not the small blind. Small blind has the aces. I'm talking about the other gun in the middle.
Right, but we're still playing from the small blind situation, right?
Right, but I mean, the discussion from Ed here is now about the other gun player.
Mm.
And the other gun's player is to call this and then jam all flops.
That's what he usually does.
Yeah. I mean, this is playing in this particular hand. We don't know what he's holding at this point.
Right.
But I get the opinion that it doesn't matter, that right now he's just playing the fact that he believes by calling here he'll be able to shove on the flop, on any flop, and get both of these players to fold.
Yeah, that's not a good plan. I just don't think it's a good plan. I mean, like you said, either way, now if you're on a gun player and you're playing from that perspective, you still have four cards that are out there. There's a lot of money in the pot, and like you said, if he shoves, not if they have any piece of it or if they're over it, you know, you could be beat easily. You could be beat pre-flop anyway. So if it's a weak board, they're going to call you anyway for what, 200 to win 400. So
yeah, I think that's the fallacy here. I mean, if we're talking bigger stacks, then it's a little different.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like it's the, you know. I mean, I don't know. I just. It's weird. You're changing who's playing the hands here and shit too. I don't know what to say. So
it's an interesting hand because you're playing it from everybody's perspective.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the flop. The pot is 441. The flop is jack of clubs, eight of clubs, four of diamonds, and again, our small blind has pocket aces. What do we do now?
Okay. So we're first to act.
First to act. Small blind. Pocket aces.
All right. So we have. We started with 5, and the raise was 140, so we have 360-ish in front of us, and there's 400 in the pot. It's not that coordinated. I mean, it's hard to imagine somebody having something like 9-10, or somebody could have two clubs in their hand, but you're still way ahead of that range, you know. But the range, somebody could have jack-jack or 8-8 here, I guess. 8-8
sure,
would be tough.
Absolutely.
But I guess I'm just getting it in. I might as well just get it in. I mean, I wanted to get it in before this and have a narrowed field, but you know, it seems like this is a good flop for aces. It really, I mean, except for jack-jack, but the way it's played out, it seems like it could be ace-king versus queen-queen versus, you know, ace-ace, you know, so I don't mind getting it in here, I guess. I would have rather gotten in earlier, though.
All right, well, the small blind checks. the end of the gun jams for 220, as we've been told he would. The hijack raises all in to 270.
Oof.
And it comes back to the small blind with snap call. So all three of us are all in now.
Snap call.
Probably
thought
it was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it could be... God, it sounds like a set. Because why... You know, if you had any of the two hands that make sense after, you know, what was going on here, it could be king-king, queen-queen, could be jack-jack,
mm-hmm.
could be ace-king of clubs, ace-queen of clubs, something like that, but I don't know if I would snap call with the small blind now that I've seen this action.
Yeah, you've got somebody that raised all in and then another one that's raised too. I mean, and all this action beforehand. I guess I'm probably not folding, but then again, I would have been the first shover and then I had to worry about it, but snap call seems a little impulsive.
Well, here's the thing, is it has to be precisely, it would have to be almost precisely king, king, and queen, queen for us to be ahead. It's like the only two hands that make sense for us to be ahead. And then, you know, like you said, the undergun guy typically just shoves, so he could have something that's not in that range. But really, for the guy to ship and the other guy to raise again, it has to be exactly king, king, or queen, queen for us to win.
Well, but again, it is plausible based on the information we're getting now. I mean, obviously, we don't know, as that small blind player, necessarily that the undergun's plan was to jam the flop, but if that's what he normally does, and he's just making a play at the hand, then we can pretty much discount his hand, though obviously he could have anything, so he could actually have hit this. And then the hijack, based on the little play that we thought of, would be at worst... jacks, I guess. But other than that, at worst, aces with us, and likely kings or queens, which we have beat. So I guess there is a case to be made that there's a high probability that we are ahead right now here.
So are you thinking that the hijack knows the under-the-gun player was likely to have shipped there with anything, and that he's trying to isolate for 50 more bucks?
Yeah, I don't know if we're getting that sense from what we know right now. I mean, my assumption, just based on the way that the story is being told to us, is the hijack has an overpair to this board, or it has jacks and has top set. It doesn't really care what anybody else has. What I'm curious, though, is maybe, I mean, obviously these players know each other, so maybe he does know that this under-the-gun player, this is, you know, one of his moves is to call these crazy raises and then ship, and knowing that most players miss the flop and can take it down. If that's the case, then great. But the hijack never played this passively at all. I mean, he was raising he raised as often as he could in his hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like the hijack is really strong here to me. I mean,
and
I realize
then,
it can know
right.
Gun,
and then if you're saying that the discussion was that the small blind turned his hand over either way, he's got to know that then, based on that the small blind has aces. So at that point, I think it's got to be jacks, right?
Someone has to have a hand that's beating us, is all I know. I don't know what the hand is, but yeah, it could
and
be.
I think it's
got
to be the hijack. Based on the story that's being told here, right. The hijack has to know that he's ahead of us and doesn't really know what the undergun player has, but isn't too scared because the undergun player typically does this with anything.
Yeah, yeah. It feels
in that
like...
case, then I got to think, as a small blind of aces, I've got to fold.
Yeah.
If I'm able to put all that together, and, you know, again, it's an interesting hand because the story's being told from everybody's angle, you know, without the card other than the small blind.
And like you said, if the small blind's call or re-raise clearly says he has aces there, I don't know why it clearly says it to him but not to the other players, but if it clearly says this person has ace-ace, then they know that there's no reason to ship it if they're trailing ace-ace after that flop, and they both shipped it.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, so I think I can get away from this hand. Knowing all the stuff he told us, I probably could get away from ace-ace there. If everything he said holds true, and he's 100% happy with his reads and how these people play, I only have one pair. You know, I could be behind 8-8, too. Somebody could have 8-8. It's conceivable, especially under the gun. So I have no problem. I really don't have any problem letting this go. I mean, I wouldn't fault anybody for calling, but I would have faulted them for checking. You know, I would have just gotten it in, and I would have gotten it in pre-flop anyway. So it's hard for me to. It's so difficult to do these hands that way, knowing that I feel bad about the way it was played up to that point, and right. We probably would have won our hand or been heads up with someone and taken a bigger pot than what's likely about to happen, because it's the only hand of the week if we lose. So it seems like. But I think I can get away from it. Can you get away from this?
Well, again, based on all the information I've given, sure, it makes perfect sense to get away from it. And really, to be honest, even without all that, based on all that, pre-flop, and then, again, I mean, it's a weird situation because I would not have checked this flop. So my money would have been in already, and I wouldn't have had to make a decision. But let's assume that for some reason I went to sneeze and I tapped the table or whatever, you know, and I lost the option of betting there. And then, you know, two players go all in before it gets back to me. Even without all this information, I got to think long and hard about whether my single pair here is the single best pair is best here.
I think there are a lot of situations where they could have played this hand differently and should have probably played it differently. Now, it could have come off that he looks brilliant when this is over. Somebody has ace-king, somebody has queen-queen, and takes on a huge pot. But at this point, I just feel like there are too many mistakes being made here at this point. I often wonder, when they send in these hands from their home games, and there's always an argument, do they take this and play it for everybody? Let them listen.
Yes, we'll find out.
You know, we don't even attempt to play in a 300, 1,000 buy-in game, yet we're telling them that we don't think their plays were right. But that's how I feel about it. It's just my opinion.
All right, so three of us are all in. Obviously, we know the small blind has aces. Under the gun has 9-9. And the hijacked has 8-8.
Oh, brutal.
So again, I mean, I don't think we gave too much credence to 8-8, but we obviously knew that, or at least surmised that he was ahead of us. So it doesn't really matter what he had.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
He was ahead of us. Runs out blank-blank. The hijack wins the 11-80 pot. He says, this is where the shouting started and still being talked about now. So questions, should the small blind have shipped to isolate the hijack, or is that losing value? I'm guessing this is on the flop, maybe, when he checked instead of shoving. And I guess my answer to that is losing value at this point. I mean, there's enough value in that pot to make it worth shoving, even preflop, right?
Yeah, and I think that's I do think that might be what he means. Isolate the hijack preflop. I think what he means, just because to me it sounds like. I don't know if he would have gotten the isolation after the flop, because the under the gun, you know, I don't know if the under the, because obviously he would have been behind the hijack, you know, and getting isolated. I think he means preflop, but I think it's worth it preflop if that's what he's asking. After the flop, I still would have shipped. I don't know if we lose value there, because, you know, you still got two more cards to come, and now you're doing it against four more cards. You know, instead of two, if you could have isolated by shoving. So I would have shoved, and we would have been trailing miserably, but I still would have shoved after that flop. But then again, I would have shoved pre-flop, so.
He says, after all, the undergun did manage to put all 360 in the pot by the end of the flop, as it was. What range of hands can the small blind call with? What do you do with ace-king, king-king, queen-queen, jack-jack? You'll be out of position the rest of the hand, and does that even matter?
I guess I could see players calling with king-king or ace-king there. Maybe queen-queen, too. I don't know. Jack-jack. I mean, he means pre-flop, right?
I'm guessing, yeah.
I could see an ace-king calling, you know, because, you know, they could have any hands, like he said. They never wake up with these big hands. They're just always doing this. So ace-king is a good hand. And if you flop an ace or a king, then you feel like you're good. Queen-queen, I guess you can call with. Jack-jack, I don't know. Jack-jack, you're basically just set mining. I don't know if I want to set mine for $140.
Yeah.
If I had jack-jack, I would either fold it or shoved, you know, depending on what I thought these players would do. But like you said, you'd be out of position, so you want to take the hand down when you can.
Yeah, at that point, if I have jacks, I'm definitely, if I'm going to continue playing the hand, I got to shove at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't just call 140 and hope to flop, and then
Absolutely, because you don't know where you are at that point. You might as well just bite the bullet and get it all in, and then you don't have to make any decisions, and maybe you still win. Or fold and just not worry about it if you think you're up against king-king or queen-queen. That's it, you know, but I couldn't call there now.
Yeah.
And the final question is, if you know the small blind will never put in another raise, in that spot as the hijack, can't you raise with all pocket pairs and suited connectors, knowing that either villain will fold or will call and get all the money in the flop, thus giving you pot odds to risk $85 to win stacks?
Yeah, I couldn't follow that question with MapQuest, so I'm really sorry. I don't know what to say to that.
I was hoping you could have figured it out.
I don't know how you would know that the small blind would never put in another raise. I don't know what that means. So, I mean, if you're telling me that there's no chance in hell somebody with ace-eights isn't going to raise again, I don't know if that's possibly true. But
yeah, I mean, maybe, again, these people have a history with each other. And maybe there's just some players that, you know, I mean, again, to be honest, a lot of the games I've played, I've never, I mean, I love reading these strategy columns in our magazine about, oh, when it's a fourth raise is put in. Fourth raise? I've never seen fourth raise in anything but a limit game. I just don't play those type of games or tournaments, you know, where that happens. I mean, generally, it's a raise, a re-raise, and at most, there is a third raise in any time I've played. So I mean, there probably are players that just say at that point, you know, and maybe it's even me. Maybe if I have aces there as much as, I mean, this situation's a little different, but generally speaking, I'm like, all right, well, you know, if they're going to keep raising, they obviously have a strong hand. I've got the best hand. I know I have the best hand. I'm looking at aces right now. You know, maybe I just not put it in now here, and that's my way of getting value out of it. And maybe there's some other players that think the same way, so they know that it's been 3-bet now, so this guy's never going to put a 4-bet. He's never put a 4-bet in his entire life that we've been playing with him. I guess that's where you get to that. Yeah. But again, you'd have to have a lot of history with the player to know that.
And the other thing, too, is he's talking about value and odds and stuff, but I know the goal when we play is to make money. But it's not just to make money. It's to make money with the best making the best decisions and giving yourself the best chance to win. And I just feel like all these what-ifs really have nothing to do with this hand anymore. It gets back to, is making 50% of your stack on any play without even seeing a flop better than going to the flop with four cards against you and not knowing where you are out of position the rest of the hand? And I like option A a lot better than option B, and I would have rather have done that than try to figure out if, as the hijack player, would my never raise small blind player, you know, I mean, he's not going to fold, so then you're, you know what I mean? It's a whole different level that he's trying to make out of this hand when it should have just been shove pre-flop.
Right. All right, Ed, we appreciate the very layered hand of the week and remind everybody else to send your hands of the week to podcast@anyatmagazine.com, and if we use it on the show, we'll send you something great, like we're going to send Ed a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. You can buy your own decks at the Ante Up Store at anteupstore.com.
All right, just a reminder, next week's show will probably be posted Friday night or Saturday because we're coming to you from the Monarch of the Seas. I'm Chris Costanza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.